Welcome to the Real Estate Radio Show,
your ultimate guide to everything real estate.
Whether you're a first-time buyer, a seasoned investor, or thinking about selling, we have the insights you need. Your host, Larry Shackman,
the real estate therapist and a top-producing broker, will break it down weekly.
We'll dive deep into market trends and speak with industry pros about everything from pricing and negotiation strategies and staging tips to financing options and home inspections. This fast-paced, ever-evolving market doesn't have to be overwhelming. We are here to guide you through it. Today's show is brought to you by TrustedAgentUSA.com. Get your market value, explore your selling options, and choose your closing date. Go to TrustedAgentUSA.com and do real estate your way. You've got options. Licensed in Illinois. Number 475-145-795. Now, let's dive in. Here's Larry.
All right, everybody, we are back. It is the Thursday before Thanksgiving. Dylan, how you doing?
I'm fantastic, Larry. How are you, man?
Awesome. So yeah, we're being joined by Dylan Kramer. I'll let him introduce himself in half a minute here. Just want to remind everybody, we're not going to be here next week on the 28th, Thanksgiving. So happy Thanksgiving to everybody. We'll be joining you again on Thursday, the 5th of December, with another great guest, Corey Crickberg. So we will see you on December 5th after this show. So happy Turkey Day to everybody. And Dylan, why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Dylan Kramer. I'm a mortgage loan originator with Neighborhood Loans. We specialize in helping several types of people work with challenging mortgage situations. It's folks who are renovating properties, folks who are military veterans trying to take advantage of their home loan benefit, and folks who are struggling through the divorce process. We help them finance their houses and understand some of the decisions they're making before they finalize their degree. So in addition to helping regular home buyers, but those, you know, when people have challenges, we're here to help.
Awesome. And how do people get in touch with you if they want to reach out to a Dylan Kramer?
Best way is to give me a call at 630-708-7088. And then you can text that number as well. It's 630-708-7088.
All right. So we are also going to be joined today by Jacquelina Jablonski. And Jacquelina, I call her Jackie. We'll call her Jackie here. But she's Jacquelina online if you're looking for her. And I'm going to let Jackie introduce herself and tell everybody a little bit about yourself and all that good stuff.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jacquelina. Call me Jackie for short. Kind of makes me feel like you're yelling at me, right? So basically, I'm a real estate investor. I'm now entering in the space of instructor. I'm an owner of two businesses, Roofing by Hernandez and I&J Go Rentals, which is, I'm a property manager. Also, I am the president and co-founder of Southwest Housing Providers Group, which is a networking group. And then I have an online group as well called Chicago Friendly Landlord Group. That's all about anything in regards to being a landlord, instructing, helping, aiding, and providing support both online and in person.
Yeah, Jackie has a lot going on, a lot on her plate. And I'll tell you this, Dylan. So I had Jackie and Elon, her husband. Does he go by Elon or Ivan?
You can call him Ivan.
Okay. So I had them on the show probably, I want to say, you know, eight months ago.
That was with me.
And you were on the show at that time. That's right. And I will never forget asking Jackie about, so what does your lease look like? You know, like how long is it? Jackie's lease is 100 pages long.
No,
right? Am I right?
No, it's 34 pages.
Oh, it's 34 pages.
Yeah, okay. It's still long though.
Okay, I don't know where I got 100 pages, but yeah. Okay, 34 pages long.
It probably feels like 100 pages for some people, yeah.
Well, we're going to get into your whole idea of why it's important that if you're a real estate investor, you have to treat that like a business, not like collecting a rent check every month. You must treat it like a business. And we'll get into that. Before we do, Dylan, what's going on with rates and what's happening right now? Where are we at?
You know, Larry, I don't know how much you shared with the audience over the last few weeks about rates, but I will tell you this. If you tuned in 2.5 months ago, about the time that the Democrats were moving on from Biden and nominating Harris, we were at about 7.5. And if you ignore everything that happened politically, we're at about 7.5. And, you know, there was a big dip down in rates where there was a window. And I think that this is going to be life in financing land going forward, where we had a big dip in rates and it hung around for a couple of weeks. And then as soon as the tide turned and it became more apparent that the markets thought Trump was going to win the election, rates kind of moved right back to where they were before, because his policies are seen as consistently inflationary, not necessarily reducing inflation. And that leaves the market right where it's at. So all things being equal, qualified borrowers are getting maybe a shade lower than 7.5. Average borrowers are about 7.5. It's about where the market's at.
Yeah. You know, what's weird is rates have been volatile over about the last 6-7 weeks or so. You know, we've seen them shoot up. We were kind of headed, we thought, towards 6%. And then all of a sudden, right, boom, we're at 7.5%. And they've kind of been volatile, but we've kind of leveled off, like you said, right around 7.5%.
I think the market likes this level until we figure out what's next, right? And so it was anticipating what's next is going to be Fed rate cuts in response to both the job market and the inflation situation, and that rates will go down. But now that's not a thing anymore, right? It looks like the job situation is okay. Looks like inflation is moderated, but not ended. And so we're in a situation that until we find out what's next, rates are going to stay where they're at.
Yeah. You know, here's my thing. I don't think the real estate market is going to do much probably for the next few months anyway, until everybody kind of sees where things are going politically, policy-wise, how is it going to affect the market? My opinion, but I see people kind of staying in their own space until they can kind of figure it out. What do you guys think?
Jackie, why don't you start with that one? I've talked a bit.
Can you repeat the question one more time? Just because.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people right now, and you may know this with your rental properties and stuff like that, but in terms of buying, purchasing, I think a lot of people are staying in place because they want to see what's going to happen with this next administration, what our policy is going to look like, how is that going to affect the real estate market or other markets. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I've seen a little bit of a decline. I think that's more for the people that are very worrisome, but there's still like a lot of deals. So, I mean, I know that from my husband, he's a broker. He's closed on quite a few deals. We're looking at things. I haven't really seen an astronomical difference in regards to what I've heard in conversation. Also, like on the tenant base, I've had, you know, some changes in regards to obviously in property management, but I still have a lot of showings. I haven't been that affected by that. I
on think rentals?
That, yes, on the rentals. Yeah. Okay. I haven't really been affected. Anytime we've had a vacancy, we filled that up really quickly. Yeah. So I'm seeing it a little bit, but not to the extent that I think that I anticipated.
Yeah. I think with rentals, it's going to be less. But what are you seeing, Dylan, in terms of mortgage apps and things like that? Are they up? Are they down? Are they
stagnant? You know, honestly, Larry, I would tell you, I anecdotally, my own business, I'm starting to see things come together. And literally since the election, I've probably had a handful of people who have been tire kicker, wait till the election. I don't know what's going on. And they're under contract in November. So is it gangbusters? No. Is it reasonably more active than it was 6 weeks ago? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I'm curious about something because, you know, in terms of the housing supply, I'm going to guess that over the next 10 years, demand is going to outpace supply unless builders really start building a lot more than they are now, which is going to have a lot to do with deregulation and making it easier for them to build and making it less expensive to develop properties. And I'm seeing, you know, and I'm hearing based on a lot of things I'm reading, you know, a lot of 50 plus year olds are staying put. They're not moving like they used to, you know, selling and going into smaller properties, maybe going into a retirement type village, that type of thing. They're staying pat. They're sticking with their property. So those properties are not coming on the market. I'm wondering. And then of course, with interest rates, you know, people that are still sitting on 2.5, 3.5, and 4.5% interest rates, there's no way they're selling and going into a 7.5% rate. So those are a lot of properties that aren't coming on the market.
I agree. My mom is in.
You spell it out, Larry.
Yeah. I mean, my mom has been discussing buying another property, and, you know, she's older than me, obviously. And her skepticism is, I don't like where I'm at, but I don't want to go and get into a new mortgage, and I don't want to get at that rate. And it's her being more skeptic about making that change. And this is something like in my family, and it's not just my mom. I've had uncles, aunts, friends of the family that are more skeptic of, especially their primary residence, where that rate is what is really, really affecting them. But I also think that that's because you're looking at a lot of people that are living paycheck to paycheck that, you know, don't have a lot of savings, don't have a lot of aspect in regards to their finances, that have a 9-to-5, that they don't want to take that risk. Yeah. Other people who are a little bit more financially stable are kind of being more risk takers on that aspect that I see. But everybody else that doesn't have, you know, a lot of safety net, they're just not making that decision as quickly and as swiftly as you would anticipate it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I'm looking at an article here, and homeownership rates among, believe this or not, those that are 70 and over have actually increased since 2015. I mean, it's an unusual statistic. Because I think it's normally the opposite of that. And I just don't see people, at the end of the day, Dylan, I don't see people selling out of a 3, 4, or even 5% mortgage to get into a 7.5% mortgage. And in addition to that, I don't see a lot of these older people selling. And in addition to that, and I'm not being Debbie Downer here, but I'm just looking at this from a, you know, 10,000 foot view. I don't see builders all of a sudden, you know, building a ton of properties. Tell me where I'm wrong on any of those things.
I don't think you're wrong, Larry. As a matter of fact, let me, for everybody listening, I did a thing and it's worse now, but when rates first went up from 3.5 to 5.5 and prices increased from about the average house of 350 to about 400 a couple of years ago, the bottom of the market to that point was $1,000 a month. Now, if you do the math, if you're going to downsize to keep the same payment you have, if you have a 3% mortgage, do you have any idea how much you need to reduce the cost of the property you live in? The answer is $200,000. So you have to move from a 450 house to a 250 house to keep the same payment. Why would you do that? If you're 70 years old, you just stay where you're living. Who cares?
Yeah.
And so they're not going anywhere. And that math's not going to change anytime soon. It's just a math thing. Like all the 10,000 foot view I get, but the 1,000 foot view, like the right here, it's insane. I have people now, they're looking to downsize, but not for age, but for, they kind of overbought. And so, you know, they bought a 5-bedroom house out in Oswego. They got it at 3%. The tax bill is now $18,000 a year. It's a $650,000 house. For them to get any payment relief at a minimum of $500 a month, they have to buy a $300,000 house.
Yeah, good luck finding that.
So you might as well just stay where you're at. Tax bill stinks, but your rate is great.
Yeah.
And so that's happening everywhere. And that's, I don't think that's going to change inventory. The other thing is, remember, you know, I hate to make a political statement, but I think we all can agree here. The state of Illinois is highly regulated. You don't have to agree with all the regulations. You just say that it's highly regulated. Developers are not streaming in here to do business.
I agree. Yeah, one thing that'll spur builders is deregulation and making it easier and less expensive for them to do that. Here, I'll throw this stat out to you. So if builders now 3x'd the amount of homes they're building, it would take us 4 to 5 years to fill that gap of the amount of homes we need to meet the demand. If they increase it three times,
there's not enough trade people, there's not enough vendors, there's not enough lumber. None of that works.
Exactly. That's my point. It's not happening.
Also, too, with inflation and the cost of materials consistently influxing, I mean, even me as a roofing company owner, during COVID, we experienced so many influx of price structures. I've never had experienced so many different price point changes, which also has affected the relationships that I've had even with my clients, you know, as a roofer, because sometimes they contract me to build a whole new roof, a new construction. And we're looking at something for 6 months out, 8 months out. I can't give them that guarantee. And they want to put that, lock that in, unless they're like making a whole deposit for we to purchase these materials in advance. Because these price flux are killing us. You know, you also have people that want to not have to have the responsibilities, the taxes, that are okay with renting because they get that stress off of them. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of people that rather pay a little bit more in rent or rent, you know, something decent. You're getting a lot of people get influenced with these DIYs that they're like, okay, I can make this work. I can, you know, decorate it an apartment, but I get that stress factor of not having to navigate a water bill, not having to deal with property taxes. I don't have to shovel the snow. I don't have to do landscaping. So let me go into that. Or I want a townhouse or condo because yes, it might be not ideally what I want, but I get that level of like somebody else is navigating that for me.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I'm wondering, so like we're coming into winter now. You can't do a lot of roofing work in winter, right? Like you're not. So I'm curious. So let's say you're talking to a potential customer middle of December, and they're looking at putting a roof on in March or April. Will you suggest to them, hey, you know, I can lock this price in now if you give me the money now and I can buy the supplies now? Is that how you will get some solid business for the spring?
Well, yeah, it is and it isn't. So like, for instance, for any customers that we've given out estimates previously, if they contact us now, then we can lock in that rate. We could purchase the materials and have them on standby for the spring. But depending on whether contingencies, like for instance, I'm looking out my window right now and all the roof out in front of my office right here is all covered with snow. There's no way that I could assess that roof and give an accurate estimate based off what I physically see right now.
Oh, yeah.
If I can't see the roof and I can't see the conditions of it, I can't really give a price point. It's best that we reevaluate that either when the snow melts or in the springtime, because we might have that influx as well. And I can't give you a full assessment. Anybody that we have given anything out an estimate for, and they are saying, hey, I would like to move forward, in order to lock that rate in, yes, they have to put that deposit down. But anybody that is like, hey, can you come out even today? We can't assess this. It's unsafe. I can't really look at it. Then I have to go out there and I have to melt the roof. I have to charge you those fees associated, the liability of that. So we get into all these technicalities that start to come to fruition because of the weather conditions.
Yeah, it's complicated. I'm wondering when you guys are, when you're, you know, inspecting a roof, I know you get up there because you got to get eyes on it, but have roofers in general, have they transitioned to using a lot of drones or no?
Yes and no. It's also, we live in the Windy City, so having a drone is not necessarily great because the wind control is horrible.
Yeah.
Also, it's the liability. If those drones are very, very dangerous, they have very sharp blades. So if that falls into somebody, it's going to cut them. So there's an aspect of like having that difficulty into navigating it. Drones are more for like if you're doing like a video, like kind of more like you're putting something on the market, you're trying to do some sort of video for me marketing aspects, or, you know, mm-hmm. like we're putting this house on the market. I don't think it's something that roofers necessarily are doing every day. Yeah. I think there's special circumstances that they use it because it is a little bit of a challenge and you're not able to actually get up on the roof, feel the layers, feel the materials, see things. They can't really get up and close. There's a visibility that some things cannot get. If a particle gets in that lens as well, then we don't really get an accurate picture and recording of what's going on mm-hmm. the roof.
Yeah, I see inspectors using it from time to time on roofs when they don't get on the roof.
Yeah, that's because they don't know that need the details.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say they don't need to get as deep into it as you guys do,
right?
So
you know inspectors, Larry, there everything in the inspector is like, oh, this looks like it could be a thing, you should hire an expert in roofing. Yeah. You should hire an expert in HVAC. I don't know, you're like, well, what are we paying you for? But that's a separate conversation.
Yeah I think you know, a good inspector is going to point something out, and if they can't really nail it down for you, or they think you need a second opinion, they're gonna point you in that direction.
I get a lot of inspector reports where, you know, people are gonna sell their property, they want to buy it, and we do have to charge for you to go out there and reevaluate it because there's a different level of expertise. There's times where, you know, even insurances right now are taking pictures from satellite images and saying, hey, this full roof needs to be replaced, when realistically it just needs to be aluminum coated. Mm-hmm. Just because there's like that black patch that you see when you go to Google Earth or Google, you know, Maps, you can see from the image, all it needs is aluminum coating. It really didn't need like a whole new roof. But because they're not certified, they're not roofers, they're not in that field, mm-hmm. it's that assumption like everything needs to be replaced. Sometimes it's a small repair. There are times where it does need a full roof replacement, but most case scenarios, roofs can be salvaged, you know, and a lot of people are not in that business. They want to upsell you, you know, and I get it because there's a liability. We can go out there and potentially not find the problem right away. But most case scenarios, I say about 90% success rate in regards to finding the issue 100% and getting it done. It's that like real small little window where, you know, hey, this roof is really shot, you know, let's do a small patch, let's get you by the winter, but let's reevaluate this and see how it works for you in the spring. Mm-hmm. Then we can see what solutions we can go into.
Yeah, that makes sense. Roofs can be complicated. You guys have been doing this a long time. How long it's Roofing by Hernandez, right?
Yes, 20 years.
How long?
20 years.
20 years, yeah. So you've been doing roofs in Chicago Metro for 20 years.
Yes.
So what else is going on with you, Dylan? Anything special? You got any special programs coming up that you can take advantage of?
You know, Larry, the biggest thing that we're working with right now is we're doing in several states installation loans where people are actually able to come in and look at roof repairs that might not pass a safety inspection, and the lender might not want to work on that for those reasons, or window replacements, or even as simple as kitchen repairs and upgrades, and finance them in. And so that's been a fantastic product. As you know, I joined Neighborhood here, the company I'm with, early this year, and so we've built some expertise in that product. Mm-hmm. And they had it coming in, but we've been able to have some of my folks take real good advantage of it. It's excellent.
Awesome.
Well, we need to connect, Dylan, because you have some loan programs available. Definitely would like to tap into that to see what we can offer our clients as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys should definitely talk. Dylan's having some technical issues over there. We got him frozen with a smile, though, so that's
good. Yeah.
You're good. You're good now. Yeah, you guys should definitely talk. Go ahead, Dylan.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I was going to say, Jackie, I'm in the Facebook group. I see you in there all the time. So I'm one of, you know, because I'm so I'll send you a DM. We won't bother the podcast with our conversation about that.
Sure. Yeah. Definitely look forward to it.
Yeah. Cool. So one other thing I want to talk about before we go deep into some of the things Jackie's doing, which are just awesome. And I want to talk about some of the properties that Ivan has on the market as well. Now, are those multi-units, are those your properties that you're selling, or are those Ivan's properties that he's representing another seller on?
Because I have those are properties that he's representing another seller. Okay. We're in the long-term business. We're in the holding business.
I thought so. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very rare if you ever see us wanting to sell a property, to be honest with you.
I was a little surprised when I saw those coming on the market. I'm like, why are they selling their property? I know you guys hold on to them for a while.
Yeah. Long time holders. We're in here for the long haul.
Yeah. Well, good. I think that's the way to do it. You know, there's a lot of people that are still flipping properties. I know several people that are still out there flipping properties, going to auctions and going that route. But I think it's a great thing what you guys are doing too.
Well, we do fix and flips as well. So that's something that we also do as well. So that's another thing to add onto my long list of things that we do. Mm-hmm. But with working with Ivan, you know, my husband, Ivan Hernandez, you know, one of the benefits that you get in regards to him being a broker is that you have somebody that is experienced in the multifamily field. You know, a lot of people make that assumption that because you're working with a broker, they automatically know. They understand like cap rates, they understand investments, they understand like what needs to be done with that. He gives a different sense in regards to, you know, in the investment aspect, which not a lot of brokers do because not all of them are investors. So being somebody that's been on the other side gives you a really great advantage. You're not going to find that very often.
Yeah. So Dylan, I wanted to ask you a question. You recently moved to Neighborhood.
Right. Beginning of the year.
The beginning of the year. Yeah. Is there a big difference between Neighborhood Loans and the last company you were at? I mean, is there some like major advantage?
Yeah, I mean, there's several. One of the things that I really like, and this is a thing that works for me personally, is this is a Chicago-based company. So when we're doing deals in the market, we've got two advantages. And the first one is, you know, the people who work here, the underwriters who work here, they understand what properties are like in our market. We've got a very unique market on many different levels, right? If you go to some of these markets, like Nashville, Tennessee, or Dallas, where they just have built subdivisions over the course of the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is it's very easy to assess properties with unique characteristics because there really aren't any. But, you know, Chicago properties very often, especially city of Chicago proper, as well as some of the Cook County suburbs, have very unique situations on properties. And the ability to walk down the hall and say to an underwriter, hey, this property's in Pilsen, or this property's in Maywood. Like, let's talk about what's common there, even though it's not common everywhere else. It's a great mm-hmm. advantage to being able to get folks to the closing. And so, you know, having the corporate office there and on site with people who are decision makers is a huge difference. It makes a big difference. You know, that's really the biggest advantage, I think. Mm-hmm. The other thing is just the ability to turn around and get attention to problem and concerns for problems for folks, because, you know, the last company I was with was based in Texas, and now you got to get somebody on the phone four states away to get some attention to something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That could be a little challenging, to get an answer.
Sure.
When you need it. And you guys are in Lyle, right? I think Dylan went into,
Downers Grove.
Okay. There he is. So Jackie, you know, you brought up a great point and we touched on it a little bit earlier. And that is when you get into investing in real estate, whether your strategy is to flip it, whether your strategy is to buy and hold, you know, regardless of what your strategy is, you have to look at this as a business and give everybody an idea of what What do you mean by that? Looking at it as a business?
Well, the thing is that nowadays with Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, social media has influenced a different type of investor, because we have a lot of people who, you know, may be successful or manage their money differently, are taking trips, you know, going to Cancun, Mexico. They're showing that they have all this freedom. But what they're not showing is the actual work aspect of what it takes to be an investor, right? Mm-hmm. How much it takes to do that, especially when you're a property manager or a landlord. What I look at it is, it's still a business. You are providing hospitality. There has to be structure. There are aspects, and especially in Chicago, Cook County, anything in Cook County, we have a lot of regulations, a lot of rules that we have to abide by. Yeah. A lot of people are not doing that properly. They're putting their emotions on their sleeve because of how much work that they put in to save the money, buy this house, how much liability that they have on hold, right? Because it's their finances. But they're not taking it in an approach of, this is a hospitality business. This is what I have to do to be efficient. This is how I have to treat my client. This is the rules and the boundaries that I need to have. And they're not establishing that. I like to have business plans. I have to like to look at it that this is my structure. These are my hours of operation. This is how I navigate if it's an emergency situation. What constitutes as an emergency? Because obviously in hospitality, there are things that happen. You have electrical heater, you have leaks, you have, you know, what does that consist of? How do they get in contact with you? What are general hours of operation? I feel like we're in this society that we always have to stop, drop, and roll because we have a cell phone, and we have lives, you know, and that's where people get stressed out. There's no level of, you know, hey, this is what I do. This is how I do it. This is when I do it. So people are scrambling, trying to figure out, like, when do I do my finances? When do I do my notices? How do I handle this work order repair? When do I walk to this building? When should I do general maintenance? So not having structure, that's how can you efficiently manage anything? It's the same thing. Your kids go to school, they have a school calendar. You know when they have break, you know when they have parent-teacher meetings, you know when they have those half a days. We should also have the same thing.
Yeah.
It's
just basic science. I think that is just a great, great point. And not only for investors, but for everybody, for real estate brokers, for mortgage brokers, mm-hmm. or roofing company executives, you have to have some type of structure. And I think probably for me, I think the most important thing, and we've talked about this before, so I know how important this is to you too, but when you're talking to a potential renter, I think the most important thing is to set out those expectations mm-hmm. from the get-go.
Day one. I need to know what you're looking for. What's your name? Who's living there? You know, how many people? Can you afford that? This is our process. So there's no element of surprise, because a lot of times you're wasting your time, but you're also wasting their time. And then you're building that frustration. You can't say, well, why am I frustrated? Why are they frustrated? Why are we not meeting in the middle? But there was no introduction in regards to what's the process, how things should be managed. The same thing with moving forward with the client, application process, leasing process. There should be it stipulated somewhere. You can't just be like, well, I expect you to do this. I expected you as a tenant to do this. I'm frustrated with you and you're lashing out at people, but there was no lines of limitation. Mm-hmm. So when you're frustrated, who are you frustrated with? Are you really frustrated with the tenant? Are you frustrated with yourself because you didn't provide them a level of explanation and expertise? You're in charge and there's no rules.
Yeah.
So go figure.
The last time we talked, you mentioned that one of the things you did is you required your potential renters to have a Zoom call with you. Are you still doing that?
Sometimes Zoom calls, FaceTimes, WhatsApps, depending on like what type of aspect that we can have. It depends on the level. But I mean, some things are met in person at the showing and we have that discussion. It depends on when we're doing it. When we're first preliminary, having that preliminary conversation, we're doing everything via phone call. The showing gives you a level of like, you know, meeting with the person. You get to kind of get that idea of like who they are, what they're needing. You can ask follow-up questions because, you know, you have basically a profile of what they said to you, the application process. When I have the actual Zoom meetings are when we are moving forward with the prospect of the person, the applicant. That's when we have it and we explain everything and they see us in person. Mm-hmm. And it's typically we do it. It's about 80% of the tenants that we do it. There's 20% that can't, and we understand. And we then navigate, you know, when all of our lease signings are always in person, mm-hmm. every single one.
And do people, are they surprised by the length of your lease? Cause you know, a lot of people, when you go to a corporate lease, they'll have maybe a 5-page lease, right?
Yeah, they're, I think that they are and they aren't. I think that they're surprised, but we set that expectation again when we are moving forward, like even through the application process, we set that expectation right away. As soon as we say that we're moving forward, we set that expectation of like, this has to be in person. You're going to be here about an hour and a half. When we sit down with them, we show them over the lease. We're explaining things to them. We're not just having them sign stuff. We're explaining it. You would be surprised. You're adopting this adult, basically, right? Because everybody who's signing on a lease is an adult. You're adopting this adult into your building, and you want to make sure that they're going to manage the property efficiently. And if you don't stipulate those rules, you're assuming that they read it. How many people read legal jargon? How many people actually go in there and read it? So then you're walking away, and this is from me learning from my previous past mistakes. You're learning that a lot of people don't have good relationships with their previous landlords. A lot of people have trauma. A lot of people, you assume as an adult that they understand a lot of things and they don't. They've never been educated. They've never been talked to. They've never had that relationship with their previous landlord. Or it's the first time that they're renting and you need to instruct them because they have not a clue of how to do things.
Yeah.
So you setting that expectation and instructing them, the whole aspect is that, yes, you're taking this tenant in for 1 year, but you on average want them there for 5 years or more, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. if you're setting that expectation right now and you're having that sit down with them and you're discussing everything, you're building that comfortability that they trust you, that they know that they could talk to you, that you're not going to talk down to them, that you're educating them, but also their children, their family, and you're changing the aspect of like what a tenant landlord relationship should be.
Yeah. And, you know, I think like if I was renting from you and I came and went through your whole process, that would actually give me more confidence mm-hmm. in renting that unit from you because I know I'm dealing with someone that's on top of her game and a mm-hmm. company that's on top of their game. And I know the rules. What do you think, Dylan? Do you agree with that? I mean, I think
it makes all the sense in the world. I think two things are really relevant, Larry. The first one is what you mentioned. It sets a professional tone and expectation. But I think that, you know, Larry, you probably had the experience on the real estate side. I have on the mortgage side where people will call me up and we've disclosed everything to them in writing 6 weeks ago. And we've been working on the loan for 6 weeks and we're 6 days out from closing. And I get a phone call that some version of, I have no idea what is going on here. I don't understand these numbers. What is my payment going to be? Why am I bringing this money to closing? I don't understand anything. It's like, well, it's all in writing for the last 6 weeks. So I didn't read anything. What are you talking about? And so I've done very similar stuff with my business to make sure that we're having frank conversations about the reality of what goes on so that we're not surprised at the end. And sometimes in spite of our best efforts, and Jackie, you might be able to bring this full circle and say, sometimes in spite of this meeting and in spite of these expectations being set, people are like, you never said, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Well, because of that, on the big aspects, like the big ones and the lease, we make them sign those, like how to plumbing issues, their credit, like reporting it to their credit bureau, reporting it if like, you know, going after like garnishing their wages. We make them sign those specific clauses individually and every single page is initialized. So there is no matter of a doubt, hey, we went over that. You're initializing every single page. What I look at it is this. As a real estate investor, as somebody that's purchasing a property, what did we go through to purchase this property? What hurdles, what aspects, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. So getting a tenant and just saying, here's this, here's a DocuSign, what are you doing? You're doing a disservice to yourself and injustice to yourself, because you're expecting that this person's going to take care of it the same way as you. You sat down at a closing table. You had to sit down, talk to your mortgage. You had to sit down, talk to your attorneys. Why are you not treating somewhat your tenant in that same fashion?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because as a title agent, so I'm a broker and a title agent. As a title agent, when I'm not the broker on the deal and I'm just the title agent on the deal, you know, if we don't close by 2 o'clock Eastern time, that wire is not happening until the next day. Mm-hmm. So we have everybody sign something that makes them aware of that, right? Because people want their money when the closing is done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even when you have somebody sign something, you know, we'll send them on our disclosure, you know, of all the title costs. We'll also, there's something there that states, you know, if we don't close, if the closing isn't done by 2 o'clock Eastern time, the wire will take place the following day, the following morning. Even if they sign that, they'll forget that in the mm-hmm. malaise and craziness and just, you know, of the transaction. And so I think those are things you have, like I have to bring up to them again, because that's an important part of it, getting your money, right? So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think really you have to kind of touch on these important things, not only in writing, but also verbally, to make sure everybody's on the same page.
So we send out a Calendly invite for everything, appointments, viewings. When you're signing, even when you're doing a DocuSign, you get a Calendly invite. You get an email and you get a text message. And in that text message, it gives you all the instructions. So we're reiterating that without us having to speak it as well. So that this way, there is no matter of a doubt that you did not receive that. You got it in the email. We said it to you over the phone before, yeah. And you're getting in a text. You deny that. I can see on Calendly that it was either sent, or I could see when it's rejected, and it gives us a message that it's been rejected, and we resend it. We contact them. Hey, we have the wrong phone number. What's the situation? So an answer is my extra step as well. When you're saying that, that's an extra step that we do, because people are going to say, I don't remember. I don't recall. I say to people, I don't sign the lease unless I have all the funds available. And people know that. And that's also part of my requirements. You don't pay, you don't stay. That's how I work. It's the truth. Yeah. You don't pay, you don't stay. You don't pay, you don't stay. I actually have a shirt that says it as well.
I love that.
You don't pay, you don't stay.
I'm going to get a hat. You don't pay, you don't stay.
Yeah. You know, I tell people it's not Burger King. You're not going to have it your way. Like, you know, it's just not going to happen. You know, we have rules. We have regulations. There needs to be that. Like, do you have all the funds? Do we have everything? Do we have a copy of everything? If something's missing, you know, you have until this time to return to our office to get all and gather everything. I don't finalize anything until we get everything in order. And they know that. They know that expectation.
Yeah, so smart. And I think, you know, like we discussed a little earlier, I think it makes people much more comfortable with the professionals they're dealing with when they're given that, you know, when those breadcrumbs are laid out on that path so that they know exactly what they have to do at any given time in your relationship with them. Hey, real quick, we know prices are not going down in terms of purchasing. Bottom line, it's a simple supply and demand issue. Mm-hmm. We don't have enough supply. We have more demand than supply.
Larry, you went out on us.
There he's back.
Yeah. Prices are not going down because supply is not coming back. And that's not going to change. I don't see that changing anytime soon. How does that look in the rental space? Do you see rents continuing to go up? I mean, prices have gone up about 3.1% in terms of purchasing. They're still going up because of that supply issue. What are we looking at in terms of rents going up? And specifically here in Chicago Metro, because we know all real estate is local.
Well, I can only speak on my behalf and what I do. Full Chicago, I think everybody's experiencing consistent rent going up. For me, insurance has played a major aspect of it. Our taxes have played a major part of it. I mean, we're getting influx of different types of, like, even with our water statement, we got the trash services are going up. So when you consistently have things going up, there is no other way but to somehow change the influx of a rent statements and give out rent increases and give out those proper notices. For me, I usually give everybody 120 days notice when rent's going to go up. I also stipulate, I have something different that I do that a lot of people don't do. Just like, for instance, let's just like right now, I'm in a co-working space. I get a month-to-month rate and I get a yearly rate. If you work with us and you did a yearly contract, you get this discount if you're in a month-to-month. That's what I do with my rent increases as well. Here's a yearly rate, but if you want month-to-month, here's this. I even have something even bigger where it's like if you want a three-month extension and six-month extension, those different rates as well. But the thing is, yes, you have to raise the rent. I mean, if not, like you're not prepared for, you know, a water boiler or water heater, because you got to take out what your expenses is, what your bottom line is. You start to see that decrease, then you're not, that's where I see a lot of landlords that where they sell their billings because they're not doing that. They are like, oh, I feel sad. I feel bad. Their emotion again is tied in and they're not running it like a business. They're not doing their numbers monthly. They're not doing them quarterly. They're not doing them annually and on time. They're doing it, you know, 6 months, 3 months, barely meeting tax deadlines. When you don't have those meetings regularly, whether it's with yourself or your team, how can you properly assess whether or not you're doing well?
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. And, you know, Dylan, Jackie does something that I think would be so beneficial for the investors that Neighborhood Loans works with. And she has these educational opportunities for investors to, you know, really learn how to landlord and learn how to do this. So Jackie, talk about that a little bit, because those things are, they're amazing. They're greatly needed. Before you get into it, I just rented a place in Evanston that the seller decided he didn't want to sell it because he couldn't get his ridiculous price he was asking for. So he decided to keep renting it again. So I rented it for 2 years for him, right? This person, I'm not even, obviously no names, is the poster child for somebody that should never be an investor. And there's people out there like this, you know, it's a kind of a cool, sexy field to get into. You hear a lot about it. It, like you said, it's all over TikTok. It's all over YouTube. Everyone's talking about, hey, how do I get into the fix and
flip? Larry, tell me why. Why is this guy a poster child for not doing this? Like, tell us that story.
Oh, I can give you a number of reasons. First of all, he doesn't know how to speak to people. He's literally pissed every renter off he's ever dealt with, including the one I just put in this unit. And it took him just literally his first phone call where he was like insulting them and just by the things he was asking them about their names and are they citizens and all this. And I mean, just bizarre stuff, like real bizarre stuff. And then after they moved in, he's like, well, I'm going to be abroad for the next 3 weeks, so don't bother me with anything. He literally told this to them. They're calling me up and going, what is with this guy? Because this is not a cheap place. This place is $2,800 a month. Evanston, nice 3-bedroom and you know, great location. But yeah, I mean, I can go on and on, Dylan, if you really wanted me to, which I won't. But there are many.
No, just some basic highlights was what I was interested in.
Yeah, there are many people out there that are just not cut out to be real estate investors. And like you said, adopt adults and their children. And now you're responsible for them.
Yes.
So what do these classes do for fledgling or new investors, and how can we get them off on the right foot so they don't make these kind of mistakes?
So my class is called Landlording 101, right? Property management class. It gives you like a crash course of everything that you should know. Everything, and I'm focusing on more in Cook County. I can't focus on every suburb. It's just too broad for me. I'll have to discuss that maybe later on in the future. But focusing on serial LTO, we're focusing on HUD. We're focusing on proper notices, which you should not be doing. Protected classes, you know, accepting all different rent payments. We're talking about everything like the basics, fundamentals that every landlord should be doing. Then we're talking about leasing. We're talking about notices. We're talking about how to do lease renewals. We're talking about budgeting and planning and doing work orders, how you should be navigating it. That also is a notice. Can't just walk into your tenant's unit. You can't just send them a text message. If you can coordinate that and you have a good relationship, yes, of course, we're giving you this much notice, et cetera. But you would see how many people are like, no, I just text them and I walk in. I don't even do a courtesy knock. You see people where, you know, they're like, well, I didn't know that I had to give out a notice full 30-day calendars, right? So they're giving it to their tenant on the 5th, and they're saying, well, I gave you 30 days. No, you didn't. You did not give them a full 30 calendar days. If you're going to properly give this notice, you have to give it on the 31st or on the 1st. What is the likelihood of you doing that? Are you going to actually see this person? If not, you have to do it the next time. Knowing the difference between 30, 60, and 120-day notice. A lot of people are not doing that accurately. They're sending a text message. They're sending an email. The rent increases as well. A conversation, a text. That's not efficient. What are you doing? You're not doing things right. I think a lot of times people don't think, if this was me on the receiving end, would I want to work with you?
That's
how I look at business. If I'm calling your business, right, and I want to work, and I'm calling, do I want to work with you? If I call the doctor's office and I said, you know, I want an appointment. Yeah. I'll call you back later. Do you want to work with that doctor? No. If you called an attorney's office and you said, hey, I'm looking for, you know, this issue. Yeah, let me see if I can give you a call back. You're bothering me. Don't bother me. Would you want to work with that professional? A lot of people are not thinking like where are we not thinking?
Yeah, seriously, I don't get it either. It's like with this, with the landlord I was talking about, I'm like, when these renters who I got in there for 2 years, and they're great people and they're great renters. I mean, you know, I know based on their last, you know, we did our background investigation and all that, you know, credit check and all that. Great, pay on time every month. And I mean, they're like clockwork, and they fix things when they have to, they do the maintenance they have to do. You know, they have 3 kids, they're a great family. And you know, it's just crazy that when they told me, you know, he told them, hey, don't bother me for 3 weeks. I'm going to be abroad. You got to have somebody in place to, you know, take those phone calls. What if the furnace goes out? What if the water heater blows up? What, you know?
They should not be bothered. It's a business. I actually am experiencing something even as a commercial tenant where my landlord is acting in the same fashion. What I just told you, improper notice, getting upset because there was an issue, get lashing at me because they're frustrated because they don't know how to navigate the issue. I mean, obviously I know how to navigate it. I'm a roofer. I do all types of construction, you know, like, not having proper conversations, getting irritated, throwing it in my face, how much they've spent on things. That's not how you do business. That's not my fault. You know, like if a water pipe bursted, you're not going to get mad at your tenant and lash at them. Like, do you know how much I spent on this? You're bothering me. I'm not going to deduct anything. Deal with it. You know, you're bugging me. Like, how many people are doing that? But also, too, what I also noticed, getting away from that aspect, is the screening. People do not know how to screen properly for tenants. What you just said, what's your race? What's your background? Are you legal? Asking, like, how old are your kids? Because they're like, oh, are they going to be brats? You know, do you have a baby? I've heard people say that. Like, I don't want to deal with the crying. You know, things of that nature. It's just ridiculous. You have people judging people based off their religion, background, their ethnicity, even where they work. You have people doing that. That's illegal. You should not be doing that.
that's one of the things that, and I don't mean to keep bringing this person up, but like I said, I'm not mentioning any names or anything.
Yeah.
It's one of the things he did with this renter. You know, he asked it, you know, he has a, he's from a different country. He has a different name, a Middle Eastern name. And he asked him, is that your real name? And I'm like, really?
You I could mean, just ask. Just I mean, the proper thing to do is say, can you spell that for me? And can you pronounce that for me? Okay. You know, if you can't pronounce it, I'm sorry. Like, I'll get used to it. I apologize. This name is a little bit unknown to me. You know, not insulting the person, but a lot of people do that. You know, and then with pre-screening, a lot of people don't know how to pre-screen. They don't know how to properly pre-screen. Then they're dealing with evictions. They're dealing with a bad tenant. Oh, I feel bad for this person. You know, they have this life story, boo-hoo-hoo, and I go figure why they can't afford rent. Also, they're not reevaluating the finances correctly for prospective tenants. So they're getting people into their units where actually they can't afford it. They have no idea how to do that.
We are running out of time here, but before we end this, What would you say is the biggest mistake new investors make?
I'm going to have to go with two. Not having the business plan, and the biggest thing is the pre-screening. I see the pre-screening with the leasing is just completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then that just has a tumultuous relationship of just endless things that come up from that.
Meaning they don't do it or they don't do it properly?
Both. They don't do it properly. They're not doing it well. They have no idea what they're doing. They're saying the wrong things, the non-educating the client, all of the above.
Dylan, you guys work with a lot of investors. Do you see that?
You know, Larry, at the end of the day, I see less of that because it's further down the food chain after they've acquired the property.
Okay.
What we do see is kind of in the same spirit. We see people trying to put real estate transactions together without doing the pre-approval, without doing the math, right? At the end of the day, one of the challenges you can have if you buy a multi-unit building, especially a 3 or 4 unit, you can get in there and you can run your math and you're like, oh, well, I'm gonna turn around and I'm gonna, and again, this goes to Jackie's conversation about understanding that your real estate agent may not be an investor or a professional in that regard, even though they're good at what they do most of the time.
Yeah,
you come in and buy a 4 unit, you look at these rents, and there's no way you're going to rent and collect more than, let's say, $4,000 a month in rent, but your payment's $5,400. You got a problem, because then you're going to take $5,400, divide it by 4, and try and get those as your rents, and you're not going to be able to do it. So, again, preliminary work, I think that both Jackie and I are talking here today, the idea that preliminary work is critical to making your real estate deal happen, whether it's on the rental side once you're renting it to tenants, but even more importantly on the acquisition side to make sure you pay the right price. Don't overpay for a piece of property because it penciled out, you think.
Yeah.
I see a lot of investors do that where they say, I think this property can get this. It should be worth this, but they have no idea, no clue how to get to that number, even with rents. And then they come in overly aggressive. They don't have proper planning on how to get to that number as well. They overprice, they overpay for it. Then they're struggling. And then they're not managing the relationships with the tenants to get to that number properly. That's something that I put a lot of planning in regards to when I'm purchasing a property that is in distress, that I say, okay, these rents are really low. I think that they could get more for them. There's a proper planning that has to be done in order to discuss what you can potentially, like, what is the potential rent? What can we actually gross later on? And what is the strategy to get there? A lot of people don't have strategies in place.
So
that's why it's a business.
And Jackie, I would also tell you that, in my opinion, when you do that planning, that's your revenue. That's your money.
Yeah.
The building needs to be priced today based on what reality is.
And I agree.
And too many investors are like, well, if I can get the margins to improve, I can make the math work. I think you have to make the math work when you buy. And then you improve the margins and that goes to your bottom line.
That goes later. And that's where like a lot of buildings are overpriced and they're not realistic because they're not actually having brokers that are telling them the harsh truth.
Correct.
Well, they say back to that old story, right? You make your money when you buy a property. You know, you have to have all these, the math has to math, as you like to say, Dylan.
Right. We've had a very fresh conversation here today, and it's always the same old story. Even though it's a fresh conversation, it's the same story. You can't readjust your purchase price. Rates are rates. The math is the math.
The math.
Behave professionally.
Hey, Jackie, if somebody is out there and they're an investor, they're thinking about being an investor, they want to sharpen their skills and just, you know, bring their business plan together a little better, how do they get in touch with you? How do they sign up for one of your landlording classes?
Yeah. So on my landlord classes, I do post them on Facebook, but I am on Eventbrite. If you look up my name, Jacquelina Jablonski, or you look up landlording one-on-one on Eventbrite, I host them in the LaGrange area. That's where my office is at. So if you look up my name, Jacquelina Jablonski, on Eventbrite or on Facebook as well, I post events as well as on there. They can also DM me, send me a message directly as well if they want any information. And I do have the landlording 101, but in going into next year, I'm going to be having specific classes just on specific segments to dive really, really deep into each subject as well.
That's awesome. Yeah, because there's a lot you can get into with individual subjects for sure.
Yes.
And if you do everything all at once in one day, that's like 3 days.
it's a little too much. So it's a crash course, but then I'll have specific subject courses in regards to next year that I'm going to be hosting more regularly so that we can dive deep into each subject.
Yeah. And Dylan, one more time, people want to get in touch with you and Neighborhood Loans. What do they do?
People get a hold of me one of two ways. You can call or text 630-708-7088, or you can just go book me if you want to talk about anything at schedule.dylan.com.
Awesome. You guys, this was awesome. Great conversation. We'll be talking again soon. I wish both of you a really happy Thanksgiving.
Likewise.
And, everybody else out
Likewise,
there,
sir.
We'll see you, on the Real Estate Radio Show on Thursday, December 5th. What were you going to say, Dylan?
I wishing you both a happy Thanksgiving.
Awesome.
Likewise. Awesome. Thank you for having us today. I appreciate it. Dylan and Larry, thank you so much for having me and sharing these conversations. They were great. And I wish you both a great Thanksgiving as well.
Yeah. All right, you guys. Take care.
Awesome.
All right. Likewise. Bye. Okay. Huh?
Bye. All right, everybody. That was Dylan Kramer with Neighborhood Loans and Jacquelina Jablonski with Roofing by Hernandez, among many other things she does. Remember, if you're an investor and you really want to get your game together as far as how you're handling your tenants, your business plan, Jackie, you really need to reach out to her because she has these classes that are specific to certain subjects, and then she has one major landlording class. So be sure to get in touch with her. If you're a listing agent out there and you want to really up your game, go to listingagentadvantage.com. You see it right there on the screen and get more listings. All right, you guys, have a great week. Have a great Thanksgiving, and we will see you on December 5th. We will talk to you soon.
Thanks for joining us on Real Estate Radio with your host, Larry Shagman, the real estate therapist and top producing broker. Now go to TrustedAgentUSA.com and save thousands when you sell, buy, or invest. Illinois license number 475-145-795. Tune in next week for the ultimate real estate radio experience.